This is the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. With Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. With Paul Kuharski, I'm Jonathan Hutton. David Reed is the chairman of the board. No Chad Withrow this week. He's on furlough. And to the person that put out the poll, let's go ahead and address this. 104.5, has Coyley had Nashville test out the new two-person Midday 180 team if changes are necessary and permanent? Let me be the first to say, this is the longest-running trio in Nashville, and we're not leaving. We don't want to be broken up. We don't want to be a two-man show. Welcome to the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Paul, your thoughts?
I didn't see the poll. But, you know, this is happening to every show right now. It's an economic thing in response to a major economic downturn that's hitting just about every business you can imagine in America. And it's not some trial run based on...
We wouldn't stand for the trial run.
Management's desire to downsize our show. And if there was a plan to do so, you could be sure that the three of us would fight it to the death.
Death. Even Paul would fight. That's how important.
That's right. I'm no fighter. I am no fighter unless there's a naked, drugged out guy in my house, potentially violating my family. But this would come up just below that, and I would fight again.
Greg Cosell joins us in 15 minutes. You can join us tomorrow night in the Midday Mixer, presented by Nelson's Greenbrier Distillery. And we have roughly 7 or 8 spots available as we sit here right now. We decided to run it back for 2 more weeks. We've got it this week and next week. You can join either one based on your schedule. But if you'd like to join tomorrow night, just send us a direct message on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook. And we'll send you the details on how you can join the Midday Mixer tomorrow night. It is the Circle of Trust. It's an off-the-record chat. It's very laid back. We're not going to quiz you. There is no password to get in. You'll know. And, yeah, well, it'll be a good time. If you've been wanting to join and you have a Zoom account or have a computer or a phone or an iPad where you can download Zoom for this, by all means, join us 8 p.m. tomorrow night. Just send us a direct message. And a big thanks to Nelson's Greenbrier Distillery, who have been excellent partners with us, both for a show and a station. Tremendous product and a great venue there in Marathon Village for all of your big events, for the LLS events. I hosted one of those there with Cosell and with Coach Mack. We do our Midday 180 draft party there, the fantasy football draft each year. Tremendous spot for those events. And check out Nelson's Greenbrier Distillery, Bellmead Bourbon, Tennessee whiskey, and much more. Looking forward to tomorrow night, Paul.
Yeah, it'll be big. It's always big. And I get a little thirsty just talking about it. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm not kicking back with a cocktail every night like a lot of people are. I save up for a special occasion.
Huh? Cheers tomorrow. Appointment viewing for us will be Tuesday night, May 26th. Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel returns. And he is going to be joined by the executive directors of the Players Association for the NFL, who is Damora Smith, for the NBA, which is Michelle Roberts, and the MLBPA, and their executive director is Tony Clark. They will be on for a roundtable discussion on sports returning across this country. I cannot wait to watch this.
Yeah, that'll be very interesting. All in prominent positions, none more than Tony Clark right now.
And that's a setting. That's a journalistic setting show where they're going. I mean, it's not like they're agreeing to come on and not answer the tough questions, right? Like this is that. That's why I'm eager to see it.
Baseball just can really. They're in a tough spot. Because I think some of them have legitimate concerns that the league may not be doing a good enough job of answering. But if they don't come back over what appears to be first and foremost money concerns, it's another shooting yourself in the foot at a moment where America, I don't want to say needs you, but where you can be of some assistance to a certain percentage of the population that would really like baseball on their TVs on a nightly basis. And you're denying them that, conceivably denying them that.
I don't understand why.
And it's going to create such bad feelings.
Why are the players individually coming out and voicing their displeasure over the money aspect? Why not let your union work for you?
Well, that's a question I think Tony Clark should be in position to address on the 26th in this conversation. And the union seems to me has been quiet on this. Not just, it's not just the players talking in addition to the union. It's the players talking instead of their union. It's not been a very organized effort.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, there's only a handful of reports that include a quote from a player in the NBA that about them returning to Orlando or Vegas. Like, I see some guys that are saying, like, yeah, I want to get back to playing, and ESPN's running that at the bottom headline because ESPN wants those games to return.
Yeah, there's been reports off the big conference call with the big names, but not with specifics.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, that, I feel like the players in the NBA are letting their union work.
Control
with the
message.
And they have a ton of control, but so does the MLBPA.
You would think, or it generally does. It doesn't seem to here. It's being mismanaged. That's unquestionable. NHL players too. I don't know. And they're also much more spread out, international. And I don't know that they're being pressed for answers to the same large degree that the other sports are, but that's not true. I mean, they are. People aren't the same percentage of people with the same intensity aren't listening necessarily or seeking the answers, but the questions are being asked. And I don't recall seeing any player quotes or any strong player quotes from NHL people either. So it's baseball's the outlier here. Though some NFL players have said pretty loudly, hey, I don't think we should be playing unless it's safe. We've heard some of those quotes from the NFL. The thing is, the NFL has time. Time is on the NFL's side here. NFL's been fortunate on the timetable for this, more so, obviously, than anybody else.
And they've kept their schedule going. They've found a way to keep it going, and the plan is to kick off on time, but you know, all the parameters are set, if they can't, to still get their full schedule in. Paul was praised earlier today by his wife, Teresa, for unloading the dishwasher. That happened during a commercial break.
I also filled it. She failed to mention, like, I emptied it, and then I filled it, just to be complete.
During one of the breaks, though, we were rolling as Eddie saw this. Eddie George joined us in the 10 o'clock hour. If you missed that, it'll be podcasted. But he was impressed with the tender love and care that you gave to unloading the dishwasher. Was that this morning or last night?
All remarkable time. This morning. You know, and it generally doesn't get done until everybody's awake because it reverberates through the entire house. So
see, Claire would be upset with me if I did that because I would not put the things back in its proper place.
You live a glorious life, my friend, in terms of laundry and dishes and stuff. There's
the OCD is real with that. Like, I don't have to do anything because she.
What's the downside of the OCD? If we could dig in deeper into your marriage.
I can't think of a downside with it other than
she touching doorknobs. Is she?
No. It's not like that. She's really big into doing things in an even order. So on the DVR, we keep DirecTV simply because she has the DVR packed full and she goes in order based on her show. So she has she watches something and then has a recap show to that with guests on. She'll go in that order. She won't binge one show at one time. It's all very mapped out in her mind.
And this looks like this Dave was ready upstairs to jump on something here sport. When I said that the dishwasher emptying reverberates through the house. He didn't like that.
No, I was going to say everything you do reverberates through the house, including your typing, ruining a Eddie George interview. But I need to praise my wife as well. I barely lift a finger around the house nowadays. My dishwasher would not allow me to use the dishwasher. She preferred to hand wash everything herself and not allow me to do it because I leave residue on there apparently. And
Reed, your back doesn't allow you to lift anything around the house.
Yeah, that's even that's a right. dish. That's right. That's right, Hutton. That's the excuse.
See, it's a shame when and I feed right into this, but when being bad at something gets you off the hook for doing it, I mean, I feel a degree of shame. It doesn't. No, but Reed is saying he's
bad. I don't know. I don't think I'm
bad
at it. I think her standards are so high. She thinks that I'm bad at these things.
But also, my setup is, I mean, I love my house. But if I'm sitting in one of the two good chairs in our downstairs TV room, my back is to the kitchen. And so if she's really doing something, if she's cooking dinner, or if she's putting dishes away, or if she's filling the dishwasher in the evening, I literally have my back to her. So I'm sitting there reading the iPad or watching the news or whatever. You want to talk about self-isolating. I am self-isolating. I might be talking to her a little bit, but I could not more physically be turning myself away from and showing myself to be completely removed from the process. She's doing that over there, and over here I'm doing something that's taking a lot less effort and contributing a lot less to the household. I'm over here reading the iPad. It might apply to the show now, Hutton. I might be sending you a link to this piece that I just read that we're going to talk about for a segment tomorrow. But as far as she's concerned, I'm sitting over there reading the iPad. And she's doing something that pertains to making dinner, doing the dishes. I did make steaks the other night. This is turned into my specialty. I do cast iron steaks. So it starts on the stove and it goes into the oven. This is one thing I cook well. So these are two things I've done in the last 3 days. But I don't unless any of you misunderstand, it's very infrequent. Apparently more frequent than Hutton.
Who's very
not
much
allowed
so.
To pair socks.
I'm not. I don't do it as well as she can. That's her excuse, not mine. Coming up, Greg Cosell joins us.
What do you do while pairing socks? Anything you want?
Anything I want, yeah. With no ill will looked my way whatsoever. Like, I'm doing her a favor by not asking about it.
This is unbelievable.
Coming up, Greg Cosell joins us. We will discuss right off the top Joe Burrow joining Cincinnati, and his opinion on the success that the rookie can have in year one is probably different than most. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. Greg Cosell joins us each and every Wednesday at this time. He's now been with NFL Films for over 40 years, and he loves the process of the offseason, the process of the draft, how teams go about building their roster, and he spent months evaluating the college players who were drafted back in April, and we're going through the non-divisional opponents for the Titans on the schedule. Started that last week. We continue that this week. Greg, how are you?
Jonathan, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Doing very well. Let's dive right in. Let's start with Cincinnati next up on the Titans schedule. You spent time over the last few months with us emphasizing Joe Burrow's poise, his awareness, his vision, the moxie for the position. And every rookie quarterback, especially ones drafted by rebuilding teams, take their lumps. He has some O-line issues for year one, but he joins a Bengals offense with some talented, skilled players. So what do you think about this pairing of Burrow and Taylor as the head coach and the excitement that surrounds that duo?
I think it's a good pairing. Zach Taylor's a young coach. He has experience with a Sean McVay-type offense, which is timing and rhythm-based. Burrow can certainly play that way, and Burrow does have excellent movement skills. There are, you know, few college quarterbacks that I've seen in recent years that can navigate within the pocket and slide the way Burrow can. This is a team that has a lot of offensive weapons. I would argue that Joe Mixon is a top three back in the league in terms of his running ability and his pass receiving ability. And when you combine Mixon with a Gio Bernard, I think they have a really good duo in the backfield. Much depends on A.J. Green, Jonathan, I think. If A.J. Green is back being A.J. Green, then he's really a big-time number one type. they drafted T. Higgins, and I like T. Higgins. I mean, they've got big receivers, and I think a lot of teams are trying to move in that direction now. And, you know, Higgins is that's exactly what he is. He's got a wide catching radius. I wasn't that alarmed by his 40 time. I know a lot of people get all worked up by that kind of stuff. To me, that was not really a big issue. I look back when I saw Higgins run a 4.58 at his pro day. I look back at DeAndre Hopkins' 40 time and Michael Thomas's 40 time, and they were about the same. So, you know, I think that Higgins is a really good prospect. They still have John Ross. Tyler Boyd's an outstanding slot. And I thought Auden Tate really showed well the last 5 or 6 weeks last year as a big physical wideout. So this is a team with a lot of offensive weapons. And Burrow will step right in as the starter, and I expect him to do well.
I know you say you like T. Higgins. Do you see him as the model X receiver to replace A.J. Green?
I think he can do that as time goes on. I think he'll probably need a little work. I think you can line him up all over, which is what he did in college as well. But I think he could work to being a big X as time goes on. His play speed is faster than his time speed. He has excellent hands. He can make tough catches. He can work the middle of the field well. So, yes, I think Higgins has a good future ahead of him. I think he's a really good prospect.
And just wrapping up our discussion on their draft class, linebacker Logan Wilson stood out to me out of Wyoming. He seems to be built for that Mike or Sam backer position. He was very productive in college. What did you notice from him?
Yeah, I liked him a lot. I think that he's a really good athlete. I think this was a position they really needed to upgrade. They were very poor at linebacker a year ago, and it really hurt them. You know, linebacker is a position that a lot of people automatically say isn't that important in the NFL until you don't have one, and then all of a sudden it's important. So I think they really needed to upgrade, and it wouldn't surprise me if he's a week one starter, even with no off season. But he's a very athletic kid, and I think you might see him on the field for all three downs right from the start. They still have some pretty good talent on that D-line. And they signed DJ Reader, who played at Houston. You guys are familiar with him being in the same division as the Texans. And I thought he was a really overlooked player by the media. People knew about him who watched tape. But I think DJ Reader is a really solid interior defender.
Greg Cosell of NFL Films with us as we take a look at the non-divisional opponents on the Titans' schedule and their draft upgrades.
We move to Chicago. Chicago is addicted to tight ends. And they remained addicted to tight ends with their first round pick, Cole Kmet. What is it about this guy that might be different than their stable?
Well, I think PK, to me, Kmet's kind of the more old school tight end. I think he's kind of a traditional, conventional tight end. I don't think that he's a great athlete. I think you can play him in line. I think he's a solid blocker. I think he'll work the short to intermediate areas as a receiver. He's one of those execution-efficient players. He blocked well in the run game, although I think he needs to be a little more physical. And as I said, he can work the short to intermediate levels in the pass game with his big body and really good hands. By NFL standards, Kmet's not one of those higher-level tight end athletes. You know, he's not a Kittle, he's not a Kelsey, he's not that guy. I think they view Jimmy Graham as still being able to fill that role, and Kmet as being the guy that sort of is a little more conventional and traditional. You know, I think if Kmet could turn out to be a Heath Miller-type player, if you remember him with the Steelers, I think they'd be thrilled.
And if he's that type player, that means Jimmy Graham doesn't have to line up close to the line of scrimmage. They can move him around more, which I don't think they did as much as what many expected them to do last year.
No, and the thing about Graham is, because he hasn't put up numbers since the Saints, people like to rip him. But if you watch the tape, he still moves very well. He didn't catch a ton of balls last year in Green Bay. The one thing he cannot do, and I don't believe he'll be asked to do, is inline block, run block. He can't do that. He doesn't do that. But I think that's why they drafted Cole Kmet. So Graham will become more of a detached split movement player, and that's what he is. You know, and again, that's how Matt Nagy will use him. But, you know, they've got, I think Allen Robinson is a really, really good wideout. He's a pure X, and he's really good. He's not talked about a lot, but I think he's a really good receiver.
Jalen Johnson, their second rounder, cornerback we talked about as a Titans possibility. How's he fit what Chuck Pagano wants to do in the secondary there?
Well, Johnson is, I think, just a really good prospect. I think he can play man or zone. We'll see whether he steps right in as a starter. They made an interesting free agent pickup in Artie Burns, who was a first-round pick from Pittsburgh a number of years ago, and always looked the part. Even when you watched him coming out of the U, you just looked at Artie Burns and said, wow, that guy is an NFL corner. And I can't tell you why it didn't work out, but it didn't work out at all in Pittsburgh. Another guy who I think will be in competition at that corner spot opposite Kyle Fuller will be Kevin Tolliver, a big athletic kid from LSU who's going into, I guess, his third year. And when he's gotten a chance to play, he's performed pretty well. So that corner spot will be interesting opposite Fuller. So we'll see how that plays out.
Coming up with Greg Cosell, we'll discuss the Baltimore Ravens and the Cleveland Browns, starting with the Ravens and J.K. Dobbins and Patrick Queen. Midday 180 with Greg Cosell. We're queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. Edley's Barbecue is excited to announce they're planning to open their East Nashville location on Monday, June 1st. It's been tough to get through tornado damage and the pandemic, but they're getting back into the swing of things at their East Nashville location very soon. Edley's is actively hiring for this location as well as their other spots. If you're interested in joining the Edley's Barbecue family, Will and Catherine, the owners, awesome. Visit edleysbbq.com/jobs or visit their Sylvan Park location this week to apply in person. We continue with Greg Cosell of NFL Films, who you can follow on Twitter at Greg Cosell. And we continue with the Baltimore Ravens, Greg. Defenses, I know they face conflict when they face the Baltimore offense because the Ravens are the only team in the league that features the offense with a quarterback as a runner and, as you would phrase it, not as a ball distributor. And now they've added J.K. Dobbins to the offense to continue those run conflicts with Jackson and Mark Ingram. That should be another layer that Greg Roman can add.
Oh, I think it's a great fit for Dobbins because, to me, he's kind of a no-nonsense, efficient downhill runner. He runs hard. He competes. I don't necessarily think he's super quick laterally, but he has enough to make an unblocked defender miss when he gets to the second and third level. And I think in that style of offense where the defense is under such stress and pressure and conflict on a consistent basis, I think this is a perfect landing spot for him. You know, I think they would see him as getting some snaps this year, but taking over for Mark Ingram as he gets older and he's no longer there, I think it's a really perfect landing spot for J.K. Dobbins.
Patrick Queen fits the formula for what we're seeing across the league at the linebacker, that run and chase stacked backer. The Ravens have addressed linebacker this offseason, and they have to feel like they're getting a player on the rise because Patrick Queen was improving as last season progressed with LSU.
Well, I think they addressed that position they felt they needed with Patrick Queen and Malik Harrison from Ohio State in the third round. You know, you hit it right on the head with Queen. I don't think he's quite, let's say, as explosive as someone like Roquan Smith when Smith came out of Georgia, but I think Queen's NFL profile will be very much the same. He's a run-and-chase player. He didn't play downhill really well, but I think that you feel that here's a guy that's very, very athletic. He'll probably end up being a full-time starter right away, although my sense is he'd fit better being a sub-package player to start his career, but he's an athletic kid. Malik Harrison, on the other hand, I think he'll be a starter as well, and he's a big kid who can play in the middle of your defense and be somewhat of a thumper as well as a pretty athletic kid.
And as you've pointed out, that's a defense that has the luxury of playing with the top offense in the league, and that means that they have the luxury of developing a player like Patrick Queen from the first round.
Without question. And, you know, they'll score points on offense. Queen might be in a situation where he can play 70-75% of the snaps as a rookie. They'll be in sub quite a bit.
Meanwhile, in Cleveland, where they signed Jack Conklin, very much a right tackle, as we've discussed for years. In Nashville, they drafted Dredrick Wills out of Alabama, who was a right tackle in Alabama. Clearly, they feel like he's going to be a left tackle for the Browns. How do you feel about that transition?
Oh, I think he can do that without a problem. I don't fancy myself as an O-line expert the way some are, but to me, Wills was the best tackle prospect in this draft. He's certainly athletic enough to play left tackle. I don't think there's that big a delineation anymore between the two positions, the right tackle and left tackle, but Wills is a high-level athlete. He's got quick, light feet. He's got quick, active hands. He strikes with pop and force. He's highly competitive. He finishes. I think he can be a very, very good NFL left tackle. This is not a bad offensive line now. I think Jack Conklin will fit what they do. And by the way, I believe Bill Callahan is the O-line coach, if memory serves me correctly. And Bill is one of the best in the business, and he will love working with Jack Conklin. Because, you know, we've talked about Conklin a lot over the years, and while I think there are some limitations to his game, no one would question Conklin's character, toughness, mentality as a player. And I think that Callahan will work on some of those deficiencies, and Conklin will be a very good player in that offense.
Meanwhile, their second pick, Grant Delpit, as a safety, comes in with a reputation of having missed too many tackles in college. Do you see that as something that is going to be a problem in the league, something that can be fixed in the league, something that where do you come down on that? How much of an issue is he going to have?
Well, I think it's a fair point and a fixable point. He did not miss as many tackles his prior season. I watched some of that tape as well. I think that you're dealing with a guy that can play in multiple spots. He played as a post safety quite a bit at LSU. He's long, athletic. He's rangy without being purely explosive, but his length allows him to be rangy. I like Delpit as a player. There's no question he missed some tackles. I thought he took some bad angles in the run game as a post safety. I think these things can be cleaned up. Now, will they be cleaned up? No one can answer that. I think they can be. But I think when you look at the physical traits, the length, he's got kind of stalking movement to him. I think he's a really intriguing prospect.
Up front on the defensive line, they add Jordan Elliott from Missouri. Is he a three technique for them? I know he's going to provide some depth behind Sheldon Richardson.
I think they see him that way. Richardson at his best is a really good three technique. So I don't know if Elliott's going to play that much this year. They also signed Andrew Billings, who's a really solid inside player. He's more of a one technique nose shade. But, you know, I think that they've got pretty good depth on that D-line. Adrian Claiborne is there now. So, you know, I think the big question is going to be at linebacker. I thought Mack Wilson out of Alabama, who pretty much played every snap a year ago because they were a sub-nickel defense, not a dime defense, he becomes a really important player because they lost Schobert. And then so their other two linebackers, when they're in base, are sort of unknowns. I believe Taki Taki was there a year ago, but Phillips, He's a rookie, so we'll see. So linebacker is a question mark for them right now.
And big picture for the Browns offense, Greg. Kevin Stefanski now there. He's going to bring a lot of 12 personnel to that Browns offense, I believe. I'll let you clarify. And that is a defined system, and that should help Baker Mayfield out quite a bit.
Yeah, I think it's going to help a lot. I think what a lot of people lose sight of is when Mayfield was at Oklahoma that final year, which got him to be the number one pick, that was a very defined system, and he played within structure extremely well. I think people have the impression of Mayfield as being a movement guy, a runaround guy. He plays within structure really well, and I think this is an offense under Stefanski that will start with the run game. Nick Chubb is a really good back, and they still have Kareem Hunt as well, another very good back. They can line up with multiple tight ends. I mean, they've got Hooper, who they signed, really good player, and Njoku's still there. They drafted Harrison Bryant, who I thought his tape out of Florida Atlantic was very, very good. I think he's a really intriguing prospect. They've got a solid O-line. So I think this will be an offense that starts with a run and it will fit Baker Mayfield. And I think, by the way, having Case Keenum in the quarterback room will be very helpful as well.
Greg Cosell with us each Wednesday. Greg, what book did you read over the last week?
I've read 23 books. I've been going crazy. I should have made a list because I've just been going nuts. I've been trying to find new authors, and then also read some of my favorites. So I'm reading a book now called The Sound of Rain by Greg Olson. I really like it. It has a female protagonist. I read a book called November Road, which I thought was a fascinating book by a guy named Lou Burney. And then I found an author named Rick Reed, who has a character named Jack Murphy. I think there are 9 books. I've read 2, but I also just have the 3rd one that I got from Amazon. So I've been grinding away, Jonathan. I've been reading quite a bit.
We get Greg's take and film evaluation and then book reviews each Wednesday here on the Midday 180. Greg, thank you as always. We'll catch up soon.
All right, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Follow Greg on Twitter at Greg Cosell. Reed, what link did you just send us during this segment? I only read the headline, but the headline is crazy.
Yes, an NFL player is suing United Airlines for sexual harassment.
Okay. Well, we'll dive into this. The details that you sent 2 bullet point details, and one includes grabbing below the waist. So we'll see if it's illegal hands below the waist. Midday 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. Midday 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Coming up at 1 o'clock today, we'll be joined by new Titans cornerback Jonathan Joseph. As we wrap up the noon hour, the headline that Reed sent us during the Greg Cosell segments, NFL player, this is from TMZ Sports, the headline reads, NFL player suing United Airlines, you let me get sexually assaulted on a plane. Reed, what's going on here?
So according to TMZ, it's an anonymous NFL player who claims he was sexually assaulted on a United Airlines flight from L.A. to New Jersey back on February the 10th of this year. Very confusing the way this kind of plays out, or at least the way it reads in the report. So apparently he was in the middle seat, and there was a lady sitting next to him on the window who immediately began accosting him because he was at that time wearing a mask on his face because of the coronavirus. She was not wearing a mask and began a conversation with him about that. Apparently somewhere along the way, she began to take some pills, became intoxicated, and that's when the groping began. It started with his knee, moved up to his inner thigh, continued from there to the point to where he said at one point she grabbed his penis and ripped off his face mask. Those are the allegations. He and his friend both tried to have the flight attendants intervene to varying degrees over the course of the flight, and that's where the lawsuit comes in. He's saying that the woman had sexually harassed him, assaulted, abused him, and violated him, and the airline did not do anything sufficiently in the meantime to step in and prevent further assault or harassment.
Paul, you made a great point during the break about the size of this flight.
She was ultimately moved to an empty row, it says in this story. So I don't understand why there wasn't a move to an empty row earlier, and perhaps by these gentlemen. I mean, I don't know. It's a bizarre story.
Yeah, it says the player and his friend were both given $150 of vouchers for their troubles. That sounds worth it to me. Of course, I'm not a NFL football player, but give me $150 vouchers. You can rip off my face mask.
You get the drink tickets and all that stuff. That's probably what Southwest would do, right? They give you the drink tickets instead of the voucher. And these, I mean, even if there's an empty row, there have to be multiple empty rows on this flight, right?
Yeah, this sounds like if they didn't voluntarily move, if it was that much a problem and he didn't get up and move, he's got to be one of these strict rule followers to his own detriment, right?
The woman... there may be strict rules on seating for that flight because of everything going on. But the woman, she did this because she was angry, not because she was attracted to him in some way.
Well, I think the initial verbal assault was over his face mask. And then when she started popping the pills, that's when it became more sexual nature.
Wow. But it doesn't sound like this was like romantic advance on her part. It was a violent advance on her part. Not that any salt is romantic. That was poorly phrased by me, but.
No, we know what you're saying. I mean, that the claim is assault. The thing too, Paul, is TMZ is not releasing the name of the player, although they know the name of the player.
Which is very unlike them. So it's very unclear what's going on here.
Where do you think they get all this information fed to them from? Because, you know, as they grew, they were known for just being the camera guys at the airport. And Harvey Levin on, TMZ TV with their latest gossip magazine discussion. And now they're all of the terrible news when it comes to celebrity deaths or anything like that. They get it and they run with it.
They got to pay a couple hundred to a couple thousand bucks to have it. Excuse me. They got to have it be known that this will be worth a couple hundred to a couple thousand bucks. And that's widespread knowledge to people who would know something like this. I would think this would be like Port Authority Police Department at Newark Airport, if that's where this flight is landing, where this complaint would initially go down.
I don't know. I mean, again, they are so inside on a lot of these reports. I'd like to know just how high up the food chain they actually get with their information.
Yeah, reading through this, I don't know if there was an official complaint ever filed with the airport or the transit authority. It sounds like this went straight from what happened on the plane to litigation. DMZ has shown restraint that they haven't in the past by not naming this player, which leads me to believe it's no one of consequence, right?
Well, maybe that's true.
Or it could have come from the player or the player's agent.
Yeah, but because they're getting this from a court document, but still, like they're tipped off and they're searching this on a daily basis. But with the Kobe Bryant death and the tragic accident, like they ran with it. Everybody thought it was a hoax or they had been hacked, but they had that well in advance of anyone being able to confirm it. So
that's getting something. This doesn't seem so much like.
Well, every time I see a report from them now, I remember back in the day when I would question the validity of the statement I was reading.
Yeah, you know? No longer.
And it's still in that same headline font where it looks more gossipy than anything else, but it catches your attention.
It's a heck of a business. They're very good at what they do. There's no denying that. A lot of people still kind of view them as not credible. I don't know how they I know. Based on the fact that they get stories like Kobe and stuff like that, I don't know what jumps them to credible in the eyes of more people.
Also, I mentioned the headlines like grab your attention, pleasing to the eye. Shannon Terry says that if he does or were coming up with a new logo or a business, he would do the freshly hot donuts sign in a similar fashion that Dunkin' Donuts has, because the line is always wrapped around that building because it is very, that logo subconsciously makes you happy. And he's like, that's the trick in the logo for the next business that I pursue. It will be in that similar fashion. I found that interesting.
The Dunkin' Donuts font?
In the fresh hot donuts available now font that they have on the side. When that light turns red,
like Krispy Kreme,
the light's on, is wrapped around at Krispy Kreme.
Yeah. So I've always maintained that.
Oh, Krispy Kreme. Sorry. Not Dunkin' Donuts.
McDonald's should do this with fresh fries. They should have a light on that says you can come through the drive-thru and the fries are hot and fresh.
Or ice cream available. Seriously.
That sign would never turn on. That sign also would be broken.
Yeah. Yes. Coming up, Titans cornerback Jonathan Joseph scheduled to be with us. Paul, I'm looking forward to this chat with the NFL vet going into his 15th year, signs a one-year contract to join the Titans roster, and where he is very familiar with the coaches he'll be playing for, both Mike Vrabel and Anthony Midgett, the secondary coach, who he played under in Houston for 6 of the 9 years he was there. I know you've chatted with him via Zoom with a media availability. We'll dive in with some questions to get to know the new Titans corner next. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone.